Mr. Toogood is speaking at another church this morning. I think it's called Journey Church in Antrim. And then he's speaking there tonight, so just ask me to fill in. I'm not promising I won't keep you as long. Only about 2 hours, like when Andrew says that. Andrew says he can keep you long. He does about 15 minutes extra than he ever will. This morning, I want to talk to you about keeping focus, but I was trying to think, when I was planning this, I was trying to think of a story to try and relate to what I'm talking about. And I really couldn't think of one, and I was really stuck. But I remembered, I used to play ice hockey, and I played all my life from about 7 or 8 years old. I played, and it was what I set my mind on doing. Everything I did, everything I worked towards, and everything I put my effort into was all about ice hockey. And when I was 17, started playing for Belfast Giants, and I was getting ready to go out on my first home game. Very first time, first 2 games were away, and then came home, the stage that I've always wanted to play in the Odyssey, all my life dreamed about playing at the Odyssey, and came this one moment that I was about to go out on the ice. I already done my warm-up skate, was about to go out on the ice for the game, and I was standing in the tunnel, pumped up, excited, raring to go, walked down the tunnel, my name got announced, and I was like, I am amazing, I am incredible, went to jump out onto the ice, and slipped and fell. Played all my life. Practiced all my life, was on the ice like twice a day, most days, when I was about 8 years old. And this one time since I was about 10 year old, that I was like, this is going to be me. I am going to be amazing. I'm just going to run out here. And I jumped out and honestly, straight my back. 7,000 people. Slow clap. I was like, I'm just going to go back in the change room. I'm just going to leave. I was so, so gutted. And the problem was that I was focusing on what I was going to do. My mind was focused on, I've got a game here, I have to play well. I was nervous, I was stressed, I was like, for me, I have to play a blind right here, I have to do my best, it's my first game, I have to make an impression. And I was focused fully on what was in front of me and what I was about to do. And when I was focused on that, I'd forgotten all about the simple steps I had to take to get to that big arena. I forgot the simple, basic steps that I'd done all my life, going from a changing room to an ice rink. I forgot how to do that, because I was so focused on the big picture, so focused, which is okay. And in life, it's the same. In life, sometimes we get so focused on our future, on what's in front of us, on what we want to be, where we want to be at. We forget about the little steps in between that we need to make to get there. And it's so easy to get lost. And it's okay to plan. It's okay to focus on your future. It's okay to have dreams, it's okay to have ambitions, but what's not okay is that becomes our now, because our now is really important. Where we are right now is so important, because it's the building blocks to where we're going to be. God puts us here, puts us where we are right now, because he's using the now to build us up and to encourage us and to give us talents and skills and abilities that we need for where we're going to be. And if I'd never learned how to get from a change room to an ice rink, I would never have been where I was. And it's so crucial, and it's so basic, and we get to the point in life where we take these basic steps for granted. And that's exactly what I did. I took my basic steps for granted and thought, I can do this all the time, and then I made a fool of myself in front of 7,000 people. I'm still scarred by that. But, so here's the thing. The now is what molds us for the future. Right now, and this step, is what makes our future. And if you want to turn to Nehemiah 1, where you should already be, it says, the context for this is that the Babylonians had taken captivity of the Jews. The Babylonians had taken the Jews out of Jerusalem, taken them out of Israel. They were in captivity for 70 years, and then the Persians came along. The Persians defeated the Babylonians, and the Persian empire at that time, King Cyrus, allowed the Jews to return to Jerusalem. Now, years later, King Artaxerxes, I've been trying to get this down all week, I would keep calling him Artaxes, but his name's definitely Artaxerxes. It's like Belfast, Artaxes. But no, he's definitely Artaxerxes. So he was the king when Nehemiah was in the land, and Nehemiah was his cupbearer. So if you want to read here, first Nehemiah, it says, the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, I'll just wing it. Now it happens in the month of Chislev, in the 20th year, as I was in Susa, the citadel, that Hanani, one of my brothers, came with certain men from Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews who escaped, who had survived the exile, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, the remnant there in the province who had survived exile is in great trouble and shame. The walls of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates are destroyed by fire. As soon as I heard these words, I sat down and wept, not me, Nehemiah, and mourned for days, and continued fasting and praying before God of heaven. And I said, O Lord God of heaven, the great and awesome God, who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments, let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant. And I now pray before you night and day for the people of Israel, your servants, confessing the sins of the people of Israel, which have sinned against you. Even I and my father's house have sinned. We have acted very corruptly against you and have not kept the commandments, the statutes, and the rules that you have commanded your servant Moses. Remember the word that you commanded your servants, Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the peoples. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though your outcasts are in the uttermost parts of heaven, from there I will gather them and bring them to the place that I have chosen to make my name dwell there. They are your servants and your people, whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand. O Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight to fear your name, and give success to your servant today, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man. And then it says, and I was the king's cupbearer. Now, it's really easy when we read things to scan over seemingly insignificant points in the Bible. It's really easy to just flitter by, go, right, that's set in the context, forget about it all. But this part, I look so manly right now, don't I? Drinking a fruit shoot. I wanted a bottle of water, but there's none left, so forgive me. So it says here that Nehemiah was the king's cupbearer. Now, to me, this stood out really insignificant, or really significant, when I was reading it. For some reason, I didn't know why. I was like, what does a cupbearer do? Who is a cupbearer and what is he? And I was kind of thinking about this, and in my own mind, I was like, it's obviously an insignificant role. I was like, it couldn't be that important. You carry a cup full of wine, you're not going to be getting paid 200 grand a year to be doing that. So it's kind of like, so I looked it up, and like I thought, it was a menial task. You weren't high ranking, but I was totally blown away when I actually saw what a cupbearer was. And it seems so insignificant, like I said, but the cupbearer was one of the highest ranking officials in the king's courts. He was so important. He had to be trustworthy, he had to be reliable, and he also would have had to have tested the king's wine. He would have been the one that brought the wine to the king. The king would have said, test that, because it could be poisoned. He had to protect the king. He had one of the closest relationships to the king in the whole court, because he would have had to have been so trustworthy that the king was actually putting his life in his hands. Because back in them days, it was one of the main ways people would try to knock the king off, would have been stick some rat poison in his juice or something and see him pop his clogs. So he was a really, really high-ranking official. Nehemiah was really high, would have grown up in Persia all his life, probably. He probably would have been a eunuch. Sad to hear. And so horrific when I read that. I was like, oh no, Nehemiah, I feel so sorry for you right now. But yeah, so the significance, though, of his role, who he was, didn't define the significance of what he was. If he was my cupbearer, it wouldn't mean anything. He wouldn't have to be a high-ranking official. I'd love to have a cupbearer. Imagine that you just ring a bell and you bring you a wee glass of wine or a wee juice for all you don't drink. But the significance of what he did, the significance of actually who Nehemiah was and the role he played, didn't come from what he did. A lot of time in life, we define roles and responsibilities as what we do. So for the likes of me, I used to be a groundskeeper in Campbell. And when I first started doing that, I didn't look at myself very highly. I had quite a low opinion of myself. I was kind of like, you know, I'm only a groundskeeper. Somebody has said, yo, what do you do with your life? Oh, I'm only really a groundskeeper. Now, I grew to take a lot of pride in what I did. But at the very start, I was kind of a wee bit down on myself about it. But we often can take our significance and who we are from what we do. But the thing here was Nehemiah's significance and the role that he played came from who he worked for. His significance of being a cupbearer wasn't from what he did. It was from who he did it for. He was a cupbearer to the king. Like I said, if he was my cupbearer, he wouldn't be that important. He wouldn't have to be a high-ranking official or trustworthy or anything else. His significance came from who he worked onto. You see, what we do in life, quite often, we define by working for our boss or working for a payslip. or working for the next promotion. We can work on the tons of things. We can work for our supervisors, our line managers, our X, Y, and Z, the headmasters, whatever. There's tons of different people and tons of different scenarios that we can think that we're working towards. Lots of us work for our payslip. If you're self-employed, it could definitely be your payslip. It could definitely be the next job that you get offered. There's tons and tons of things that we can set our minds to work towards. But the thing here was, Nehemiah knew that his responsibility came from who, like I said, who he worked for. And when we're doing our everyday job, we need to remember that our responsibility and our prestige and who we actually are, our importance of who we are, doesn't come from what we do. It doesn't matter whether you're a cleaner or a bank manager. It doesn't matter what you're doing. It's who you work onto while you're doing that role. And when you work onto the King, and we have the King of Kings, we've got Jesus as our King, when we work onto him, when we choose to set our sights and our minds and our hearts and everything that we want to do, when we set them on that, we'll live our lives fulfilled. Because when you're working for a boss or a payslip, you'll never be fulfilled. You'll never find fullness in a payslip because it ends somewhere. Your boss is only a human, so you're never going to find fullness from working for a boss. You may feel appreciation. You may feel like you're encouraged, or you may feel great for a couple of days when you get a promotion. But then when you find that that next promotion gets empty after a while too, because eventually you just want another promotion, or you want the next big thing, or you want the next job. But when you're set on, I work for the King of Kings, when you're set on, I work for the Lord of Lords, and do that unto your best, Colossians 3, 23 and 24 say, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. Nothing is insignificant when we serve God. When everything we do, when everything we give is about him. And you can do that in any job. I struggled with this. I worked in Campbell College as a groundskeeper. And when I first started working there, I wasn't a Christian. I got saved while I was working there, and I really struggled with it. I used to go to Campbell. It was quite a high-class school, and then I ended up going back and working there, and I felt really, 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 really low self-esteem, feeling like I'm going back here to work in a place that I should come away with massive good grades and doing incredibly in life. I should be a teacher or something. I came back as a groundskeeper. Was kind of like, or janitor, or whatever name you want to put on it. And I was kind of like, really embarrassed, actually. But when I became a Christian, I started finding a new way to work. I started discovering that my significance didn't come from what I was doing. It was this very verse that I read that I was like, I don't need to feel down on myself anymore because I'm not working for my boss. I'm not working for Campbell College. I'm not working for my payslip. I realized that I'm serving the Lord Jesus Christ in everything. And it's really hard to look at your job and go, I can't serve Jesus doing that. It's really easy to look at your job and go, sure, I was only cleaning floors or cutting grass or lifting litter. That was my main one, was lifting litter. I used to walk around the grounds being like, flipping lifting litter again. Just going around with a litter pick. It was half my job nearly, was lifting litter around the grounds. Some boys can honestly litter schools up, something shocking. Blew my mind, like how much litter, like 1,000 kids can drop. It's like 3 pieces of litter per kid, and I'm sitting picking every single one up. But that was the hardest thing for me. When I was in that moment, when I was litter picking, I was like, I just felt so low about myself. And it was really tough, but I honestly just walked around them grounds, and every time I did it, I had to go, I'm lifting this. And you know, it sounds so naff sometimes, but I was like, I'm lifting this for God. I'm lifting this next bit of litter. I'm doing this next task. I'm lifting this next table, this next chair, whatever. I'm doing this unto God. And it's when we form that, we'll find nothing. Brother Lawrence, I've been reading a book by Brother Lawrence, sounds all official, Practicing the Presence. And he said, he was a cook in a monastery, and he said, it is enough for me to pick up but a straw from the ground for the love of God. It is enough for me to pick up but a straw from the ground for the love of God. Brother Lawrence found his significance in not picking up the straw. It wasn't picking up the straw that he found his significance. It was the fact that he picked it for the love of God. Everything he did was for the love of God and the love of Jesus. And that's where he found his significance, his prestige, his identity, his who he was, wasn't in him or wasn't in his boss. It was in the Lord. Corinthians 5:20 says, therefore we are ambassadors for Christ, God making his appeal through us. We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. And this is what we're meant to do. This is what we should live our life by. We are ambassadors for Christ. When I was reading that, I was like, what is an ambassador? Because I honestly didn't know. I'm not just saying that. I actually didn't know what an ambassador was. I knew that he was living in embassies around the world and stuff like that. But I was actually like, what actually is an ambassador? And I looked it up. And the word for ambassador was presbyo in Greek, which means represent. So literally representatives. So we're to represent. We're to represent God on earth. Bring heaven down to earth. We are to manifest and walk out God's love, his power, his mercy, his grace on earth. We're representatives. That representative, that word, is from one of the closest meanings of practically being. Not, we're not God. I'm not saying that before you take that away from what I'm saying. We're not God. And we can't do anything without God's power in us and through us. We can't do anything to that level, that excellence, without him in and through us. But we're his representation on earth. And that blew my mind. And I was like, well, if that's the word they're using, what is it? Well, an ambassador's role is to protect citizens, number one, to support prosperity, and to work for peace. And that's our role as Christians. And so often we've been seen doing the opposite. So often Christians are represented as doing the opposite of what that role is. We're so often, and it's not actually just what Christians do, it's what the media represents today as well, and what people just perceive Christians to be. They don't perceive us to protect people, to support people, or to work for peace. We're quite often seen doing, you hear people today, like, all wars are religious. You hear all this stuff today, people saying stuff like that, and that shouldn't be the way. I'm not going to talk about pro or anti-war, but we should be working towards peace in whatever way that's going to work and be most effective. We're to be ambassadors on earth for Christ, representing heaven on earth, manifest through us, and not through our own power, not through our own strength. In situations like that, we're to call on God. We're to find God in us, Christ in us, the hope of glory. That's what we're to find our peace in and to find our work in. We're work in that, Christ in us. And that literally means Christ in us. Christ is in us and working out of us, the hope of glory. And that's where we're to work from. We're to work from that place of rest and going, that is the truth. That is fact. Christ is in me. And it's not to do with my actions. It's not to do with what I've done. It's not to do with my good deeds, my bad deeds, my excellent deeds. It's nothing to do with what we have done, because we couldn't do anything to get to that point in the first place. It's all to do with what he did on the cross. He represented us so that we could represent him. He went to the cross and paid our price so we can live on earth and give that price to the world, give that freedom, that mercy, that grace, what he died to give us, we're to represent here on earth. When that really sinks into our heart, when that really, really permeates our soul with that truth of literally we're to represent heaven on earth. Like, actually take a second to think about that. Think about everything that heaven's ever meant to you all your life. Think about everything that heaven has ever been to you. Think about everything you'd think heaven to be. We're to usher that in to earth. We're to be the ushers of that goodness, that grace, that mercy, that love, that glory. We're to be that on earth through him who strengthens us. I absolutely love that. Absolutely love that. Just blows my mind every day. Some days where I lose the plot and I don't think about it. It's not part of my life sometimes where I completely just can go off the rails or lose the plot some days. But honestly, when you bring it all back and you go, this isn't about me. It wasn't about me in the first place that I received that grace and that mercy. This is all about him and all about his grace, his mercy, his goodness flowing in and through us. One of the next points from Nehemiah's life is from Nehemiah 1 to 3. Now it happened in the month of Chislev in the 20th year, as I was in Susa, this is in the winter, I was in Susa, the citadel, with Hanani, one of my brothers, came with certain men from Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews who escaped, who had survived the exile, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, the remnant there in the province who have survived the exile is in great trouble and great shame. The walls of Jerusalem are broken down, and the gates are destroyed by fire. So Nehemiah's brothers came back to him. Nehemiah had never probably left Persia, they reckon. He'd never been to Jerusalem. Nehemiah's brothers came, and Jerusalem to him, to Nehemiah, and everything that he had learnt and passed down through his fathers and his father's fathers, everything that he would have learnt about Jerusalem was a great city of God. It was a city of promise, a city of goodness, a city of just excellence. Everything he would have known in his heart, read about, and been taught was all about how great Jerusalem is and the promises God had made about it. And his brothers came back and gave him this report. And they said, the walls are destroyed and the gates are burnt down. Your city's in ruins and everybody's in great trouble and shame. And shame literally means exposed. That word used for shame literally means they're exposed. The feeling of shame, they were actually just left wide open for all sorts of attacks. And the walls were, honestly, the walls of Jerusalem were one of the biggest things for people back then, was the walls of your city. How your city was protected. It spoke of God's protection, God's love, God's care, God's promise. And it's where the temple was. It's where their holy city was. This spoke of everything that God had promised to them. And Nehemiah's looking at this and going, Lord, this is your promise. All I'm seeing is ruins. All I'm being reported to is ruins and wreck and all this just horrible atrocities going on. And he was sitting looking at this promise of God. His brother's reporting all this horrendous stuff going on. But you know what struck me? His brothers came and talked about it. His brothers came and complained and said, oh, we're in great shame. We're in great turmoil. We're being greatly oppressed, blah, blah, blah. They talked about the wreck walls. They talked about the ruins that the city was under. But you know what? That city had been in ruins for 142 years. They'd lived, generations had lived in a ruined city for 142 years. And all they were still doing was talking about it. They were just bringing it to people and talking about, oh, you know, it's terrible. It's terrible what's happening down there. You know, it's dreadful. We just can't cope anymore. It's like, why don't you do something about it? Honestly, why don't you do something about it? Why don't you fix the walls? But all these people had just stood and watched. Great people, promises of God. They knew the promise but weren't acting on it. They knew what God had said about their lives, but they were sitting looking at a ruined, what was perceived to them was a ruined promise. And nobody had moved. Nehemiah was the first person in 142 years since the Babylonians came along and destroyed their city, destroyed the promises of God right under their eyes. Had looked like he'd taken away all hope that the Jews had ever had. Made God look like he was nothing to the world. Made him look like he wasn't relevant. Made him look like your God can't do anything. Sure, a mere human Babylonian king can come along and wreck everything you've ever dreamt about. Nehemiah was the first guy to stand up and go, no. This isn't it. Nehemiah stood up. Nehemiah grieved, actually, for 4 days. Didn't eat, fasted, prayed for 4 days. And then he stood up and went into his king's chamber to present him with wine. And the king said, then why are you so grieved? It just shows you how he was actually, how he presented himself in the king's quarters, doesn't it? The king, I could actually tell, knew him so well, he was like, you're grieved about something. There's something on your mind. And he turned around to the king and he said, my city's in ruins. Pretty much just said, my city's wrecked. But he was the first one to turn around and say, release me. He said to the king, release me and let me go back to my family. I promise you I'll return. He said he'd go back to his city and repair it. And the king allowed him. Like, that's unheard of in that time. If he's this highly respected, highly ranked officer in the royal courts, it's not quite often that at that height responsibility, the king's gonna go, aye, away you go. But he obviously had such great favor with the king. His attitude and the way he worked was obviously of such a high caliber that the king said, what do you need? The king sent him on his way with letters of passage through different towns and cities and areas and lands. And Nehemiah was the first person to stand in the face of a problem in this situation and go, this isn't the way it's meant to be. It wasn't, oh, God's not working for us. It wasn't, oh, God's not in this. God's not with me. God doesn't love me. God's fed up with me. He moved, and it's quite often the same in our lives. We look at walls around us. We look at things we've built in our lives, foundations we've set. We look at things that we've established, things we think to be truth, things we know to be truth. But then the first instance where it goes wrong, quite often we crumble as well. We turn around and say, it's not working. I've done it in my life. I've turned around, I've prayed for things, I've prayed for sickness and illness, and I've just got so frustrated. I've been like, Lord, what's going on here? I'm not seeing this. And quite often we look at the walls and complain about the fact they've crumbled. We complain about the fact that our gates are burnt with fire. We complain about the fact that there's stuff going on. You know, there's so many people in this country especially complain about the troubles, complain about the riots, complain about stuff going on. But there's so many of them people that just sit on the sofas and watch the news about it happening. There's so many people who sit today and complain about what's going on without being moved to action. And this is what Nehemiah did. Nehemiah stood on the promise. Nehemiah looked at God's promise and said, this is true. what we're seeing is deception. God's promise is the truth. Nehemiah stood in that and went, this right here, this is fact. What God promised about this city, about our people, about our plans, about our promises, this is truth. No matter what we're seeing right now in front of us, this is truth. The Lord has said that we're going to be protected, that we're going to be great people, we're going to be mighty men, that the Lord's got great plans for us. This is truth. And he stood and he said, what are we going to do to rebuild these walls? He was a cupbearer, high-ranking officer, but he wasn't a builder. He wasn't an architect. He'd probably been a cupbearer and lived in the king's courts all his life because he was a eunuch. You're a eunuch from a very young age. Doesn't happen when you're like 30 unless you're in a terrible accident. We're not going to talk about that. But he literally had worked for the king all his life. But even though he knew nothing about building, he made the move to go, God's promise is true. Whether I'm capable or not, I'm going to stand on this and see it happen. Romans 8:37 says, no, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. We all know that verse very well. Most of us will. And this is the type of promise that we need to stand on when things encounter us, when it's sickness, whether it's financial issues, whether no matter what it is, we need to go, this right here is truth. I am a conqueror in life. No matter what the situation looks like right now, no matter what I feel right now, this isn't true, this is. I am a conqueror in life. Why? Because of him who loved us. Not because of me. Because of that focus on God, that focus on what God has said is the truth. What God has proclaimed is the truth for this time. And then I choose to stand on that. Nehemiah knew that there was no other choice. He wasn't going to sit and grumble and complain. He wasn't going to sit and moan. He was going to stand up and do something. He was going to stand up and make a stand and go, the Lord has said, so this is going to work. And there's times and times throughout that Nehemiah stands on that promise. You know, it also says in 1 Corinthians 3:9 that we're fellow workers with God. You're God's field, God's building. When God makes a promise, it doesn't always mean that God's going to do it all by himself. It's not just God's job to see through a promise. Quite often we sit and go, well, Lord, you promised. You've said you've promised. We point the finger. But God has established us with Christ in us, given us the Holy Spirit, so that when we see a promise, when we know a promise and don't see it manifest, that we're to step in that situation. We're to be the bridge in the gap to bring heaven to earth. We are that bridge to stand on the promise and go, this is the truth. This is wrong. Let's bridge that heaven to earth. Let's bridge that goodness, that mercy, that grace into these situations. Not say your promise isn't working. We're co-workers for a reason. We're to help. We're to usher in. We're his feet. We're his hands. We're his body on earth. We're to usher in that goodness, that mercy, that greatness. And I love that idea of ushering in, of really just bringing into the world and being that bridge, standing in that gap. So Nehemiah went on to see the walls of Jerusalem rebuilt in 52 days. Now that is phenomenal. That is honestly, built the walls around the city, 52 days. Established the gates, reset the promise of God. And it took no time at all. All it took was him to stand in the gap. All it took was him to stand in that space and go, this is God's word. And look at the incredible things he saw. He saw opposition was away. There's no more opposition. Guys, Sanballat and Tobiah were challenging the whole time, telling them that it wasn't going to work. Even a fox stands on that wall, it'll collapse. All these things, slandering, trying to get Nehemiah to stop what he was doing. Tried to pull him into the temple. He was saying, I'm not doing this. I've got good work to be doing. Nehemiah stayed focused on what was in front of him. He kept his focus pinned on, I'm not listening to you. People giving me grief, jip, whatever. I've got a good work to be doing here. I've got something that's far more important than listen to your slander, than listen to gossip, than listen to whatever, X, Y, Z. I've got something more important to direct my sight on, to put my vision upon. He canceled debt in the city, completely eradicated debt to all the people. Said, anybody who owes money and whoever you owe it to, Just cancel it. Nobody owed money. There was no opposition. They had walls. The promises of God looked reestablished. All because he took a stand. He didn't know it was going to work. He didn't know what was going to happen. He can't see the future. Just like us, sometimes we look at them situations and go, well, it's easy for him. Sure. His worked out fine. It was easy for him to do that. He ended up rebuilding the walls and protecting the people. But he didn't know that. He didn't have a clue that that was going to work. Nehemiah 4:20 says, in the place where you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us there. Our God will fight for us. This is what Nehemiah knew. Nehemiah said this when they were under attack and under oppression while they were trying to rebuild the walls. Nehemiah knew that it wasn't him. It wasn't the people. It was nothing else that they could do. Nehemiah knew that our God will fight for us. Nehemiah knew that this doesn't depend on me. I'm just going to take a step into God's promise and be the one who stands firm on what he said. The worship guys want to come up here quickly when I'm finished. He knew that he needed to keep his focus on God or it wouldn't have worked. He knew that it was all dependent on what he stayed focused on what he put his sight upon. Because in life, everything we do and every way we think is hinged upon our perspective of what that life is. We act and react how we perceive life. Our perspective comes from what we focus on. So how we see life depends on our perspective, and how we perceive anything depends on our focus. And when we focus on God, which is what we're meant to do, our perception becomes a lot clearer. How we perceive things, how we evaluate things, how we judge things, how we question things, how we plan things, completely flips. It's in keeping that focus and that perspective like Nehemiah did, and everything he did, his heart was just to work unto the Lord. Hebrews 12:2 says, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. This is what we're called to do. Fix our eyes and just go straight. Kind of like blinkers on a horse. Blinkers on a horse mean that the horse only walks in the direction that his eyes see. So you put blinkers on the side, and he just walks the direction that you turn his head, because that's all he can see. He sees it's clear, so he walks that way. We're to kind of be like that with our focus on God. Blinker off what's happening around us, the destruction we can see, the slander we can see, the problems we can see, and just focus on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. And I believe that's a promise for today. A perfecter of faith is a truth for today. It's not our faith. It's his faith in us and through us yet again. It's always about him in us. It's not about us. It's never, ever been about us. So our focus mustn't be the problem in front of us or the issues we face. Our focus must be on Jesus, above it all, finished everything, approved us and set us on course for life abundantly. He made the plan. He took the first step so that we could start making the first steps. So in everything, our focus and our perspective needs to be Christ in us. We are more than conquerors. This is our hope. This is where we're moving. And this is how we walk. Usher in heaven, down the earth. Amen.